Welcome to Aviation Consumers' continuing podcast series on the world of aviation products and services. This month, Aviation Consumer Editor Paul Bertarelli spoke with Bruce Landsberg of the AOPA Air Safety Foundation about the foundation's annual NAAL report and how to get the biggest bang for the buck when investing in aircraft safety-related equipment. Here's Paul.
I sent you a copy of the article that's appearing in Aviation Consumer about safety investments for aircraft. And we used for this, the basis of this report was the NAAL report, which we read every year, and Safety Foundation does a terrific job of compiling that. I'd like to ask you, as individual pilots, how should we look at the NAAL findings? In other words, are we kidding ourselves by saying that this doesn't apply to me because this is for the other guy? How would you respond to that?
Well, one of the great things about statistics is you can take comfort in the fact that it always applies to the other pilot if you're reading about it. But this is not a statistical sample. This is the population. This is all of us. And I think the tough thing about accidents, a way to look at it is, accidents always happen to the other guy until they happen to you. And nobody in the 40-plus thousand accidents that reside in ASF's database ever thought they were going to have an accident when they took off on the flight. So I think we have to be a little introspective and say that we really do need to learn from other people's mistakes.
If I'm a 150-hour-a-year pilot, which these days is probably a lot, it's probably more realistic to say you're an 80- or 100-hour pilot, and I look at these findings in the NAAL report, is it reasonable for me to assume that, say, if I look at the large number of landing accidents or loss of what we call runway loss of control, is it reasonable to assume that even though I consider myself fairly proficient, I'm at risk for that kind of accident?
I think that depends on your experience level, the airport that you're operating from, the type of aircraft. If it's a tailwheel type airplane, the statistics are pretty clear that they're a little more challenging, and you do need to be going out and practicing. If you're operating traditionally at airports where you have crosswind runways and the wind is never more than 20 degrees off the final approach course, that makes things a whole lot easier. If you're operating off of a fairly short strip and you have some pretty significant crosswinds on a regular basis, or you're going to fly into an airport like that, then you might want to get some practice in that area with an instructor and make sure that you're comfortable with dealing with a real 10 to 12 knot crosswind as opposed to the actual component only being a couple of knots.
One of the things we talked about was the importance of understanding the accident rate, not just the number of occurrences. And you mentioned that the FAA is improving its ability to determine hours flown. How are they doing that, and how is it working out so far?
Well, I think it's a little early to tell, but the FAA Office of Accident Investigation has taken over the responsibility of the General Aviation Activity and Avionics Survey. And what they've done is to increase the size of their sample, and that, I think, has a significant benefit in reducing the amount of error. So over the next couple of years, I think we're going to start to see a significantly more robust survey that will, in fact, give us a far better idea of rate and trends. And I would also say, in the past, I don't know that the absolute rate was necessarily correct, but I think the trend information is pretty accurate. Whether the actual number of landings per 100,000 hours or landing accidents per 100,000 hours is correct, I would say that the percentage, that is, we're approaching almost 50% of total accidents due to in the landing phase of flight, is probably not too far off.
So if I understand you correctly, it's possible to discern from the NAAL numbers some pretty broad trends, even though you don't have a specific rate.
Absolutely. I can say with a high degree of confidence in terms of fatal accidents that low-level maneuvering flight is going to be one of the bad categories, and that encompasses a number of areas, most of them self-inflicted and a few that happen on every flight. but that is consistently a high fatality producer. I can also tell you with a high degree of confidence that we will bend more metal or composite in the landing phase of flight than any other.
Are we getting any better at some aspects of flight from what you can tell from the NAAA reviews?
There are a couple of areas that I think we're seeing some shifts. In the technologically advanced aircraft category, I have to give a real gold star to the manufacturers in reducing the number of fuel mismanagement accidents. This is one that it's not a high fidelity producer, but we're cracking up better than two airplanes a week, and that's been going on since time immemorial. The new airplanes have some better technology that basically strongly remind the pilot that he or she's about to run out of fuel, and we've seen a marked decrease in those kinds of accidents in the new technology airplanes.
Last, the $64 bonus question. If you were picking what the top safety-related investments for an aircraft owner or an aircraft operator are, what would they be?
I think, without a doubt, the best investment is going to be in yourself, and that is either getting an instrument rating and then getting proficient with it. In many cases, the rating is, as is so often said, a license to learn. It depends on the training environment in which you were trained as to how proficient you actually are. And then once you have that rating, that you stay up with the proficiency. One of the big challenges that I think all of us have is that flying in actual weather doesn't occur that often, even for pilots that are fairly active. And in my own case, I take an instrument proficiency check with a pretty robust, ill-tempered instructor every 6 months, and I've been doing it that way for several decades because it helps me to stay on top of my game, and he frequently doesn't let me go fly the ILS at the home base. He's taking me to places where I don't have home court advantage and the workload is high. So that keeps me much more proficient. So that would be my number one recommendation if you have only so many dollars to spend once you get beyond the basic equipment.
And once you've got past the training, you've allotted a portion of your flying budget for that. What's your number one hardware recommendation if you have one?
Well, if you're flying an old technology airplane, there are two things I think that come up pretty high on the list. The fuel totalizer is a very good one, particularly if you're prone to stretching out your fuel limit. If you're like me and you always carry at least an hour's reserve, that might not be quite so important. If you're doing a lot of cross-country flying, weather data link, the portable weather data link like the Garmin 396 or 496 could be a very good investment, provided that you understand that it doesn't change the weather. It does force you into some more decision-making situations than you might otherwise have. And we've seen and are starting to see some accidents where people are attempting to use this equipment tactically in convective weather. And that's not a good thing. So like any tool, it can be used or misused. But I would say that's, if you're flying cross-country, that's a pretty good investment.
I recall we talked about that before, the possibility of a spike in weather-related accidents because a pilot who has data link may be a little bolder than he otherwise might be. Do you think that's going to smooth out with time or become an established trend, or is it too soon to say?
I think it's too soon to say. The one thing that's difficult, Paul, in all of this is when we do the NAAA report, we're looking at the glass being half empty. We look at the accidents. What we haven't seen and what FAA won't be able to measure, and I'm not sure anybody knows quite how to measure, is the number of successfully completed trips. My sense is that with some of this new equipment that we're having that allows us to make better decisions, if we are inclined to do so, is that there are many more trips that are being completed, which improves the utility. Unfortunately, there will also be an increase in accidents. But if the number of trips successfully completed goes up significantly more than the number of accidents, then I think you can say that that's a net gain.
Last item, how about a little plug for Air Safety Foundation? Where can we find the NAAA report and other products and services on the ALPA site?
Well, that's very kind of you to ask, Paul. We're unabashedly proud of our website. www.asf.org is the place to go. We have approaching 20 free online courses. The NAHL report is there, all kinds of publications, more things than I could ever possibly describe here. And we encourage people to go there, and if you've got 10 minutes, go roam around a little bit. If you find a course that you'd like to take, some of them run as long as an hour, go ahead and do that. And some insurance companies are now starting to give accident forgiveness and relief on your deductible in the event that you do have a problem if you participate regularly with ASF programs. I would also point out that ASF is funded largely by pilot donations. We're tax deductible charitable organization, so we appreciate it if anybody would care to make a contribution.
Okay, well, we're happy to make that endorsement, and I thank you very much for being with us today, Bruce.
Thank you, Paul, and safe flights to you and your readers.
Bruce Landsberg of the AOPA Air Safety Foundation. Once again, that website is www.asf.org, and you can read the complete article in the July issue of Aviation Consumer Magazine online at www.aviationconsumer.com. You've been listening to Aviation Consumer's continuing podcast series on the world of aviation products and services. Comments on this audiocast welcome at audionews@avweb.com. Thanks for listening.